Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
What's trending?
Number one on what's trending, the Royals are back at it tonight. A homestand begins with the Seattle Mariners. Michael Wacha on the bump, 6:40, first pitch. Vern's on deck show at 5:30 here on 96.5 The Fan. Unfortunately, this was a series that weeks and weeks ago we were hoping was going to just be one of the big headlines in Kansas City all week long. It just did not pan out that way with the Royals' performance. Unfortunately, if anybody took a peek at the standings, the Royals are 6.5 out. We've said it is obviously over. They're 75-75. Heck, the Astros are not even leading the West anymore. The Mariners are the division leaders. So even if you swept
the
Mariners,
you could technically put the Mariners out of the lead of the West, but you'd still be trailing a team by more than that.
Yep.
So you would need, I mean, honestly, barring winning every single of the remaining 12 games and finishing 87-75, it's over. Now look. I guess crazier things have happened. The Rockies, didn't they win like 25-26 to finish the season?
Look, it's a bummer. I was hoping to be like, hey, I'm going. I was hoping to be like, hey, I'm going to multiple games this series and all that, and it really mattered. But I'll be. I didn't have anywhere near that vibe this week against the Mariners. It stinks.
Yeah, it does. Cole Reagans will pitch tomorrow, so at least we'll get to see him one more time. I didn't really do much for this season, but more
heading
just
into
the
next
2026
year.
Season. Yeah. Next up on what's trending, the Chargers defeat the Raiders on Monday Night Football, alone atop the AFC West at 2-0 after the Broncos, of course, blew their game late as the last second field goal by the Colts did it. Texans also losers last night, 20-19. Baker Mayfield went down the field in the final 2 minutes of the game to secure their win for them. CJ Stroud's team now 0-2. Who leads the Colts? That's right.
Colts are 2-0. Jags are 1-1. The Titans are 0-2, and the Texans are 0-2.
Colts have a real chance to win that division.
I do. I still feel decent about my Jags.
I
we'll see.
Genuinely thought they would stink with Daniel Jones. So
He's better than Anthony Richardson. That's the key.
If this holds and they're not just like last year's New Orleans Saints, well, then I was way off of that team. I thought they'd have like 5 wins.
I thought Jones would be better. I think we said they have better chance to win games than with Anthony Richardson. With that said, I do not think Daniel Jones would have an offense that hasn't punted 2 weeks into the NFL season. Elsewhere on what's trending, some injury news. You mentioned that Bucs game last night. Unfortunately for them, their defensive tackle, Kalijah Kancey, will miss the rest of the season with a pectoral injury suffered yesterday, former first-round pick. That's a big loss to that very good Tampa Bay defense.
Yeah, that's really bad. Now, the NFL, I mean, look, the quarterbacks, they're now saying J.J. McCarthy, 2 to 4 weeks. Jaden Daniels is still questionable for this week. We might be out 5 or 6 starting quarterbacks by this weekend. Look, some matter more than others, like Justin Fields' missings, not as important as Joe Burrow.
Sure.
But still, the idea that 5 or 6 starting quarterbacks could miss this weekend's games. Next up on what's trending, speaking of that, the Bengals have signed quarterback Sean Clifford and Mike White to their practice squad, with Joe Burrow out at least 3 months. Obviously, they're just going to go with Jake Browning. They could have made an argument for going with Kirk Cousins. If you've got a guy that started and you kind of trust, I'm not surprised to see they'll go with Jake Browning. More often than not, we talk about teams going after the quarterbacks off of other people's rosters. Very rarely does that actually happen. Normally, it's just this. The backup starts, and like Carson Wentz will start in Minnesota, and they just go this route instead. Mike White, he's probably got more starts in his career than Jake Browning.
I don't know. I've never tried to comp Mike White
I think he started
before.
Started the exact same number of games. 7. That was my whole point on Drew, where like he's like, oh, I think Jake Browning's the best backup quarterback in the NFL. I'm like, can we know that? Can we? I actually just assume the best backup quarterback in the NFL is the guy who has started like 60 games.
Carson Wentz might end up being the better backup.
Not the guy who started 7. I just don't think I know if Jake Browning's any good or not. He has started 7 career games. I bet his stats aren't even that far up probably from Mike White.
Well, Higgins.
It helps having Jamar and T. There was one game Mike White ironically played as a backup against the Bengals and threw for 450 on that defense. I think that was two or three years ago.
Jeez. Man, you guys gave up 450 to Mike White? Dang.
That was the year they lost to the Chiefs in the AFC title game.
Don't forget, on Tuesdays, our lunch partner here on Cody and Gold. Gold give you a chance to reel in a deal every Tuesday at Pearl Tavern in Lee's Summit. $2.50 fish and shrimp tacos, $5 house margaritas made with premium Jose Cuervo silver, and from three to close in the bar only at Pearl Tavern. Summit Hospitality Group, proud partner here on Cody and Gold. You said you've been over at Pearl Tavern a few times.
I have. It's very, very good. Yes, I have been over that way. It's kind of in like Dusty's neck of the woods.
Okay.
But... very good. Very good. You like mispronounced your own name.
I know.
So confusing.
I know. I was confused myself. I was very confused myself.
Lots of people pronounce like different people. I was like, how'd you mispronounce your own name?
I was speaking too fast. I was talking too quick. Gould.
I was like, am I going to let this go? I was like, I was trying to sound like, that's just like a weird one.
Yeah.
It'd be like me saying Corey and Gold. Be like I know my name.
Well, Corey is not the same as what I did. Yeah, Gold and Gould is a slip of the tongue.
Yeah.
Saying Cody versus Corey is completely off.
You added
an R in there. It's a different.
It'd be like me saying Coldy, maybe.
Sure.
Just adding a letter or something.
Yeah. Yes.
That's all. Someone says you got to get the fried lobster tail of Pearl. Ooh, that sounds good.
There you go.
Well, I mean, I'm not interested.
We will get to all 32 here in about 7 minutes or so, but let's talk more about the Chargers and Raiders last night. It's hard to argue. The Chargers look really impressive two games into the season.
So far, they're the best team in the division. That might not hold
at
the moment.
They're 2-0. They've already got two division wins. They have a third division game in a row coming up.
What an interesting
schedule quirk. Yep. The Broncos on Sunday and a chance to get the 3-0 in the division right out of the gate. What's been impressive for me about them, not only Justin Herbert's play, but so far, two games in, Quentin Johnston, who was a top pick a couple years ago, looks like a completely different wide receiver. Like, highly thought of out of TCU, really trended towards being a bust. And two games in, small sample size, he's got like 150 yards and three touchdowns, including a 60-yarder last night. He got the Chiefs, obviously, in the opener as well a couple of times. If all of a sudden to go with McConkey, he turns into the receiver they thought they drafted a couple years ago, that's a problem.
So far to this point, Justin Herbert has been perfect. He was a very limited interception guy last year anyway. He only threw three, which was the best in the NFL for a regular starter, which is a 0.6% interception rate. He did not throw for a ton of yards or a ton of touchdowns, but he limited the damage. So far this year, he is completing 72% of his passes. He is averaging 225 yards or 250 yards a game. He has five touchdowns and no picks. It is hard to imagine. And their defense has been one of the best in the NFL. So to this point, they have played as good as anyone in the league. One of their games is tough, I would argue, against the Chiefs. One of their games is not tough. I don't take the Raiders serious and never will, at least while it's, I don't know. Well, it was his birthday yesterday. How old's Pete Carroll? 70?
Oh, I don't know.
I did see that it was, or maybe it was the day before.
He was still chomping on the gum and running up and down the sideline.
74 years old. As long as it's Geno Smith and Pete Carroll, it's hard to think that they're going to be a serious competitor. But it is impossible to ignore for all the years, and this is the thing I hate about it. Some pundit's going to be like, see, I told you. And they would have been wrong on the Chargers five other times in a row. I genuinely think, I'm not saying it's a Chargers year. I'm not predicting them to be a Super Bowl contending team yet. I think they got to earn that right more than just getting pested. Win a playoff, get to a divisional round.
The division's real, though, for them, man.
The division is very real for them, and they look like a very tough out. Very tough. They look to be one of the more balanced teams in the NFL between offense and defense. So barring some major injury, they're a problem. I don't think there's any other way to view it. If the Chiefs do win the division this year again, it will be down to the wire. I think that's safe to say at this point, don't you? That they're going to be fighting for this thing.
Yeah,
the Chargers look like it's a fight.
It feels like for the first time in multiple years now that the way things are trending, whether it's for division or even a playoff spot, Cody, week 18 doesn't feel like you're going to have the luxury to just rest everybody. It feels like this is week 18 in Vegas. Feels like that's the game the Chiefs are going to need one way or the other. I don't know whether it's for your division, for a wild card seeding, whatever. It feels like that's a game that's going to actually matter.
And at this point, it seems like we've learned that the division's going to be competitive. I thought maybe it was being overblown a little bit because I wasn't sure where the Broncos and the Chargers were actually going to be. But I do think that based on what we're seeing right now, this division's going to be a challenge. and the six games the Chiefs have against the division, they're not going to need to, they're going to try to avoid letting too many of those go. They're 0-1, and the Chargers do have a really good chance of being 3-0.
We're looking at not just
Broncos could be in this week. I'm not saying that's a gimme or anything.
Sure. I mean, it's not, the division part is the crazy thing is that they could be 3-0 with three division wins in their back pocket, including one road win in Vegas. The Broncos game is in LA, so they, but still.
Neutral site.
Right. And then they get the Giants, Commanders. We'll see about Jaden Daniels' health. Dolphins, we don't know what the heck's going on. I mean, Mike McDaniel might not be the head coach by then. Who knows? Colts, who are obviously playing good football right now. Vikings, I'm assuming McCarthy will be back by October 23rd. That's a month from now, but you never know. And then Titans, Steelers, Jags, Raiders, before they finish up with their toughest games of the year. Eagles, Chiefs, Cowboys, Texans, Broncos. But they're up until the final four or five games, there's some games on that schedule, unless the Chargers like they have in the past, where you could see them getting to 8-9 wins pretty quick.
What's important to note, because like we don't have a big sample size on Harbaugh, obviously he's only been the coach there a year. The Chargers have started this way before. They have looked really good before. They won each of their first two games last year with ease. They were 2-0. They were one of the better defenses. They were one of the better offenses, and then proceeded to lose three of their next four. Now, one of those games was to the Chiefs, but they lost to the Steelers, the Chiefs, and the Cardinals in a 3-4 set, and were an absolute dogfight against the Broncos. So, like, they can't just be like, we're 2-0, and the Chiefs are 0-2, and things are good. You better not sleep on the Broncos this week, because if the Chiefs win against the Giants, you lose to the Broncos, well, then we're right back in the same spot. You guys are all one game ahead of the Chiefs. They still have a game against you if you're the Chargers, and two against the Broncos, and I'm still going to feel like the Chiefs are the front runner to win the division in that case. Have they shifted the division odds? Are the Chargers now the favorite to win the AFC West?
I would imagine.
Is 0-2 and 2-0 enough to shift it?
Imagine it's pretty darn close. Let's see. At FanDuel right now.
My guess is that it's even money for either side. But
right now the Chargers are favorites. Plus 105. The Chiefs are plus 230. Broncos plus 330. The Raiders are 15-1. So the Chargers are outright the division favorites. And it makes sense. I'm not saying they will end up winning it, but like, they should be favorites right now. They got two division wins in their back pocket. They're 2-0. They look good. The Chiefs offense is a mess and they're 0-2. I mean, at some point the wins do have to count for this, but it's betting for a reason. Maybe right now you're looking, man, for the first time in years, I can get the Chiefs at plus 230. If you think they're going to get this thing figured out, that's just to win the division. We went through the win total stuff earlier, for the Chiefs to finish with more than 10 wins still, on the season, they're minus 125. So the odds are still in their favor that they're finishing with more than 10 wins. Now, 12-win season again, the Chargers are actually plus 135. The Chiefs are plus 290 to finish with 12 wins.
Briefly, before we get to all 32, the NFL did release a statement on Tom Brady saying he did not violate the rules, which I didn't say he did violate the rules. I'm just saying it's bad. Mm-hmm. He said, owners are not prohibited from going into the booth and sitting with a headset on. They just have to follow the same rules as in they're not allowed to have access to like a cell phone or those things in order to look stuff up. There's no policies that prohibit an owner from sitting in the coach's booth or wearing a headset during the game. Brady was sitting in the booth at his capacity as a limited partner. All personnel sitting in the booth must abide by the normal rules. They did also say that he is still prohibited from going to a team facility. He has to attend those production meetings via Zoom. And this little cop-out, in my opinion, which was, it is up to the teams for what they tell Tom Brady in those meetings.
It is. It is. This goes back to what I was saying.
Matt Nagy can't sit in the meeting and decide. I still think he's being given an advantage that other people aren't.
Yeah, we don't need to go through the whole convo again. I'll just say it again. Like, I agree the optics are really bad for it. I would still say if Andy Reid, Matt Nagy, or pick any other team's offensive personnel was concerned that Tom Brady was truly getting a massive advantage, I think we would have heard about it even more. I also don't think, it's not the game week stuff. Like that's the thing. Like I don't think that's what you should be is concerned about. I think it's more concerning in those meetings. He's building even more relationships with guys that eventually in 3 years, they might want to hire as the next head coach of the Las Vegas Raiders or something. That's to me, the personnel problem, not the individual game week that he's going to go call up, Pete Carroll. Hey, you won't believe what Andy told me. You know what they do? They can't run the football. So they're going to pass more this week. I mean,
I think if a team did tell him that, he absolutely would tell Pete Carroll that. He's meeting with Chip Kelly 3 days a week. Yeah. He's not just going off his own vibes and not using information. If he's learned anything to that point,
I just don't think he's picking up anything.
If I were a team and like, that's you might not be wrong. My argument would be, well, then Nagy should get to sit in it too. Like, if you don't think there's, if you, or Spags, if you think there's nothing to gain in it, that when whatever broadcast that Tom Brady gets to sit in for the production meeting for the Bears game this week, Spags also gets to sit in it. He gets to sit in and listen to the same things Tom Brady does. He gets to be on the little Zoom call, turn his camera off, turn his mic off, and sit in and listen to the same stuff Tom is. The truth is, if I were an organization, I would just be incredibly combative. Or just tell him nothing. Like, Tom, I got nothing for you. Hey, coach, I was asking, like, pass, next question. Like, what do you got? I'm not giving you
I just
you
don't
anything.
Think telling Tom Brady, because this is what happens sometimes in those meetings, it sounds like, you know, telling Tom Brady, hey, we think we got an opportunity to take advantage of this, okay? Telling Tom Brady that when he's about to call an Eagles game does nothing for the Raiders 3 weeks from now. It doesn't. Like, I just don't buy that. It does, Cody.
I see it's plied learning of what the NFL is doing and what teams are doing.
We're acting like these guys are idiots, though. We're acting like these guys are stupid and have no clue about any team without possibly going to a production meeting.
I just think it's still an advantage other teams aren't given. That's what it really boils down to me. Yeah, they're being overblown. Given preferential treatment versus other teams, but they did make a statement on it, obviously, because it was becoming a national story yesterday. Let's get to all 32.
All right. We just got done talking about the Chargers and the Raiders, and kind of leans into this a little bit more. If the Chiefs don't win the division, gave you the odds. If they don't win the division, the head coach of whoever that team is, whether it's Harbaugh or Sean Payton, that should be the coach of the year. Now, I understand that Shane Steichen, if the Colts win 13 games or something, he probably should and will be the head coach. Heck, if they win 11 games, Shane Steichen might be the coach of the year. But if you are that coach that ends the 9-year run of the Chiefs and you win it by winning 12 plus games to do so, then Harbaugh should be coach of the year. He's 10-1 right now, actually. He's got the second best odds. Sean Payton is 30-1. So Harbaugh has the better path. We just got done talking about their scenario. So
did Tony Sparano win it the year that he knocked off the Patriots?
I do not know.
In fairness, Tom Brady got hurt for the year, so maybe that
one. I'm not sure. I'm just saying, whoever, if in fact it happens this year where the Chargers win the division, Harbaugh should be coach of the year.
I don't think that's unfair. I still think the coach of the year is kind of lame in the way they do their process, in the sense that Andy Reid and other good coaches on good teams just have no chance to win
it. It's an overachieving award is what it is.
Yeah, which puts Shane Steichen firmly in the mix for that. But I don't disagree. This would be the only chance I think Harbaugh should get a chance to win it, based on the same criteria, in the sense that you're supposed to have one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL. I can't just be handing it to you. But if you knock off the dynasty from doing the thing they've done for a decade straight, sure. It's so funny because the coach of the year, it's mostly a who's who's of fired head coaches or bad head coaches. That's what makes it so weird. I'm not saying there aren't some, because like John Harbaugh won it when they went 14-2 in 19. Sean McVay won it. Those are great coaches. Nagy's won in the last decade. Stefanski twice, because Jay Binkley's pointed out multiple times. Brian Daboll, a guy who we don't think
is
going to get through the end of the year. Vrabel, who was eventually fired from the Titans a few years after that. Like, it is just as likely to be Bruce Arians or Ron Rivera, both won in the last 10 to 12 years. It's mostly a list of guys, again, overachieving, meaning the following year you get fired.
Yeah, overachievers and first-year head coaches and new head coaches have the inside track. Brian Schottenheimer in Dallas has a good chance. If Dallas were to win 10 games, he's in play to win it. New head coach. It's just the way this award has worked. That's why it's kind of fun to bet on. It's a fun market because it can shift pretty quickly.
Versus like MVP, which you know, three things have to happen. The only thing you know about Coach of the Year is don't vote on the three best coaches in the NFL. Don't vote on McVay.
Yeah, you have to have a perfect seat. You'd have to have a perfect season if you're any of those top tier coaches.
Speaking of Sean McVay, okay, so we all got scared off of the Rams for pretty good reason, I think, because Matt Stafford was coming in with like serious injury concerns, didn't practice any part of August. But we also said one thing amongst us, Gold, which was, well, I loved them before the year. I thought that they had a ton of talent, could have a great team, could be a real threat in the NFC. Well, Stafford's been healthy, and they look every bit of it. That looks like an offense that can score. That looks like a team that can contend. That looks like one of the three best teams in the NFC. If Stafford stays healthy, they are one of the best teams in the NFC, and they can win a Super Bowl.
I
mean,
and they got Puka in the end zone for the first time since week 14 last year, which is kind of crazy. It took that long.
Yeah, that is.
Even though he's been put out of numbers. The question is, it's still going to be Stafford's health, Puka's health for that matter as well. But we know the defensive front that they have. I didn't think they were all that impressive against Tennessee. It's Tennessee. But with that said, Matthew Stafford looks sharp. And if he can stay upright, then I'm with you. The Rams will have a great chance to win the division and be one of the top three seeds in the NFC.
We'll get a better sense of it. They got Philly and Baltimore both on the road in the next four weeks. San Francisco and the Colts squeeze between that. So that's kind of it's an interesting schedule. We'll see.
So I haven't been overly impressed with Ben Johnson. I think part of this is just the he's the next guy. Like, he's going to be the next Kyle Shanahan. He's Sean McVay, all of this other stuff. And I don't know if that part of that is actually Caleb Williams and just what he's kind of inherited. But going into the season, I think they have really under-delivered to what a lot of people have kind of expected from them. Obviously, they're 0-2. They blow the game against the Vikings. And then they get completely destroyed in Ben Johnson's return to Detroit, where Jared Goff does not look like he needed Ben Johnson as much as people say he did to have the success that he did. I think from what it's more about the hype of what people thought Ben Johnson would be, where we haven't seen that two games in. And whether it's from a points per game perspective, a passing yards per game perspective, they're in the bottom half of both of those. They are a top, I believe, 15 or 10, maybe even offensive team in terms of running the football. But it just doesn't feel like we're getting what people thought we would get maybe from Ben Johnson, at least through two games. It's really early, of course, but it doesn't, plus the mistake in the game against the Vikings with not kicking the ball out of bounds. It doesn't feel like he's delivered so far.
Some of it has just got to be for them. So there's a couple of questions you ask yourself as it relates to that. One, just Caleb Williams just stink. And he didn't stink last year. 20 touchdowns, 6 interceptions. That's not way off from Justin Herbert's numbers, including the yardage, right? So, like, he wasn't the world's worst quarterback last season. So if there isn't noticeable improvement from Caleb Williams, I will fear that from their perspective. But it's also new offense, new system, new scheme. This goes back to the original thing of the way I don't like how they handle this stuff. It's probably going to take Caleb Williams a little bit of time and Ben Johnson a little bit of time to put his stamp on this thing.
They've got a couple weeks ahead,
I don't know.
You know, where there's maybe an opportunity to get going. The Cowboys this week, that defense doesn't look good of Dallas. The Raiders, we just saw them. Commanders, we don't know if Jaden Daniels is playing. And then the Saints before they play the Ravens and Bengals. So like the next 4 weeks, I think will kind of tell us if it's going to happen this year.
Yeah.
I'm talking push for playoffs or anything like that. Otherwise, it is still year one. Keep that in mind. But yeah, I mean, I think this past week was more about Detroit was just out to prove to everybody that Packers game won. The Packers are really good, but we're still here. Like, our offense is still this. We also are very familiar with Ben Johnson. All of that probably contributed to what was a disappointing performance by the Chicago Bears. That's all 32. Here on Cody and Gold. Don't forget, you can't count on much, right? But you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Stream your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long, starting at just $30 for your first year. That's just $2.50 or so a month. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today.
I just wonder, I don't know. I just hate the way teams handling quarterback. I feel like the same thing's going to happen in Tennessee. And it's going to be like, 3 of the last 4. The other thing is the Bears might just be the kind of franchise that ruins quarterbacks. And, you know, like if you look at Baker Mayfield's stats when he was with Cleveland and Baker Mayfield's stats since he's been a member of the Bucs, Baker Mayfield has consistently been a top 10 quarterback the entire time he's been the Buccaneers starter. And look, I get that he's got weapons and all this, but like Todd Bowles, none of us are out here lauding him as some offensive genius.
That's because he's a defensive guy.
Right. And so like, or just a genius at all. Most people kind of mock. Hell, he made a bunch of mistakes in time management in that game. And Baker Mayfield, swept them all under the rug.
The Jets played the Bucs last year, remember? That he botched the whole overtime thing.
Yeah.
So, like, and he still manages to put together numbers. I think a lot of times, I think really good quarterbacks will make up for mistakes no matter what. But there's no denying. The last, like, 10 years have taught us that organizations, like, and sometimes head coaches, but sometimes just organizations can ruin a quarterback for a few years.
The
Jets and the Bears might be the two best organizations at it. They are horrible at quarterbacks.
Yeah, it might just be like they're in a way cursed because if you look at the Bears, they spent all that money on the offensive line. They brought in Joe Tooney. Mm-hmm. They have DeAndre Swift still. And then if you look at the wide receiver, I mean, he's inheriting Colston Loveland, who was a very good tight end at Michigan, DJ Moore, Roma Dunze. Like, it doesn't feel like the offense should be stagnant, I guess, because I don't know where they rank again in terms of particulars. But
they've given up 6 sacks so far, which would be on pace for 51. They gave up a league-high 68 last year. So technically, they're on pace to give up less.
Yeah.
Not good.
By the way, thinking of coaches, Sean McVay reportedly tore his plantar fascia while coaching on the sidelines.
What?
Yeah, just a random coach injury. Sean McVay, he tore his plantar fascia.
So how's that? What's
he'll be in a boot and stuff, I'm guessing, or whatever the rest of the year.
In a boot on the sideline?
Yeah, I mean, I would assume.
Is going to Hugh Freeze it up in like a...
No, he'll be on the sideline.
In a hospital bed.
My guess is,
that was one of my favorites.
He's going to probably just have a boot or something.
That's an all-time coach. They,
I forget who they were coaching. They told the opposing coach to look up, and he's over there waving in the press box down. Hey, good game, coach.
That's built just some different coaching news. Up next, though, thinking of injuries, who could be back on Sunday, but should he? Plus the random question.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not
outside of Cleveland.
You know
the Browns, outside of
Browns. You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Of the day. Coming up in 30 minutes, Nate Taylor, our Chiefs insider from ESPN, will join us. Plenty to get into with him. Obviously, the performance on Sunday against the Chargers and Eagles the last 2 weeks, I should say. And, of course, something that Cody and I were going back and forth on in the 11 o'clock hour, which is this pie chart, if you will, of who's to blame for where the offense is right this second. Yeah, there's injury luck that hasn't worked out for them. Suspension they knew about. Veach, Nagy, Andy Reid, Mahomes, everybody's part of this, but we'll see if he agrees with how things have transpired over the last couple of years. This is not something that just happened overnight with some of the personnel, even if a lot of it is due to a suspension and an injury. So looking forward to having Nate Taylor join us. We'll also ask him about what we're going to discuss right now, which is Xavier Worthy's availability perhaps this Sunday. We know he was likely doubtful on Friday, then ruled out Saturday afternoon. And sounds like from national reports on Sunday morning that people think he's got a chance to play this week. So should he play and all that? For me, it's pretty simple. If they believe there's no increased injury risk by playing this week versus waiting another week, and he is comfortable and confident in his own ability to protect himself and play and have the same catch radius, well, then of course he should play. None of this, like, oh, well, just hold him out till the Ravens game. If he can't have an increased risk of re-injury, which there already is a risk, they're playing football, plus he's got a dislocated shoulder with a harness, then he should play. They're 0-2. They don't have the luxury to say, our offense is good enough to get through this Giants team. No, they're not. No, they're not. They have not proved to me that they're fine just taking the ball and rolling it out there and hoping the offense is good without Worthy.
To my understanding, he wanted to play last week anyway. So
okay, yeah,
he himself wanted to play is what I had heard. And so, and they decided, and I think most of the reporting kind of reflects this, that they're like, let's wait a week.
Okay.
So that part of it always makes me think that there is, even if it's a small, slightly greater chance that waiting one additional week is not the worst thing. And here's the appeal of waiting in a week. Even though I'm getting ready to tell you why I'd play him this week. The appeal of waiting a week is that you're one game closer to getting the three people on the field together. You do not risk losing Xavier Worthy for the three games, and two, way more important, in the Ravens and Lions game where you need Worthy more, and the eventual return of Rashee Rice where you'd like Worthy and Rice and Hollywood Brown hypothetically on the field together. And it is the Giants. And if this were a 1-1 team or a 2-0 team, I don't even think there's a chance he'd play. That's what's so funny. I don't even think they'd risk him on the field. But because you're 0-2, I do think you take the calculated risk and Xavier Worthy's got to be on the field. And you just got to hope that whatever the, and even if it's a 1% stronger likelihood that he doesn't play, and I think that there is gold no matter what, because this injury comes with the, if it's hit the wrong way, it could end the season. That could pop back out.
Oh, I know the risk is that. I'm just saying, is it any different this week versus next week?
No, in the sense that I don't think he's more, like, the injury is more likely to happen, other than the fact that he's playing football an additional week, so no matter what, there is an additional risk.
Sure, but that's his job. He's got it. If he can play football, he plays football.
So my temptation is, if they were 1-1, I would just tell you to sit them one more week. And let's buy some time on the back end to try to get these three guys healthy at the same time for more important games in the middle of the season when the Chiefs will be trying to play catch-up, obviously, in the division and the AFC based on where they've started so far. But because they're 0-2, I do think this is one of those, it's worth the risk. Later in the week, we can talk about how effective it'll be. But genuinely, because of their positioning, I do think you have to take this chance. And obviously, he wants to play, or if he wants to play, then you don't have to feel bad about that. I'm just like, I understand your point of like, football's football, but every game he plays less likely he is to injure it. And if you thought you could get the Giants win without him, I'd be tempted, but only if they had won the game before. I would only take that risk in the other side.
Yeah, it's just, I don't have the answer. Maybe Nate Taylor does. Like, I would love to. Is playing this weekend jeopardizing anything that wouldn't be jeopardized in a normal NFL game?
And if
the answer is no, then, and he's able to have a good catch radius and all that, then he's playing Sunday.
I saw him lift his arms above his head at the end of last week and make a catch. So hypothetically, he's supposed to be and should have, with that brace, not the same radius he had before, but a much better one. It's the same issue with an injury like this, is when it's displaced, it is more like, now, you know, like people separate their shoulders and then don't continue to separate them, or he could have had it and then later just get it fixed in the offseason if he can get the rest of this year.
Probably what's going to happen.
Without running into that problem. I had my shoulder separated one time. They never had to have surgery. It just stayed in, I guess, the rest of the time.
Yeah. But you don't play tackle football in the National Football League.
No, I don't. I've made bad physical decisions.
Do you want to try tackling Cody? And which shoulder was it?
Oh, I continued to play.
Which shoulder was it?
Because I was like 17.
The right or the left?
It was the left one.
Just go right. Just get a helmet on and just go full force right in there.
I don't own the video of it anymore. It was on video at the time. We aired it in slow motion in my high school TV because you could watch it pop out.
So I saw there was, I don't know if you guys have seen this angle. There was an angle, I think it was on NFL Network. I just had it on in passing, or maybe it was NFL Network like pregame, I think, before the game started on Sunday. They had an angle from the opposite end zone that had a play just horizontally, and you're just seeing Xavier Worthy, and it's following and following, and all of a sudden, it looks like he gets hit by a train. Like, that's how, like, it was full speed. It wasn't slow-mo. It looks like he got ran over, like, he got hit by a train. That's the way that it looked. It looked nasty. And way more than when they slow it down, it's obviously a different feeling that you get, of course, or when you see it live, it doesn't look as bad. But from that angle, with how fast Xavier Worthy's moving, I mean, he's dedicated full speed to that route. And he just gets basically clotheslined. It was nasty.
I do kind of get the point, although I need more time maybe on it. This idea that like, hey, Andy, or, you know, hey, Brett, should you be looking for wide receivers who can take a hit? Like, your biggest wide receiver, Juju Smith-Schuster, he's just been a passing thought in this offense for the last 3 years.
I mean, like a physical possession sort of.
Well, Xavier Worthy's 5'11", 165 pounds. Sky Moore was 5'10", 170.
What's Rasheed? Like, is he about 6?
Rasheed is a bigger guy.
6 foot, 6'2", 6'1",
he's probably, 200. I think he's 6 foot.
Rice and Royals are the exceptions, right? Otherwise, they typically go for the guy that's 5'11 and 180 pounds.
Yeah. But I would also say, like, for as much as we talk about that, it's okay to have variant in size. And lately, I would argue that he has been not afraid to a kick. Because, like, Rice is kind of a bigger guy. I don't think that, like...
Yeah, Royals and him have a
certainly small. Plays
like,
bigger,
Juju Smith-Schuster, Jalen Royals, Rashee Rice, similar body style compared to, obviously, what you're talking about with Brown, Worthy, you know, Sky Moore in the past, Michael Harmon in the past.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's not been afraid to have, like, the smaller, skinny frame. And are those guys more injured? Yeah, Hollywood Brown's been hurt. Xavier Worthy's been hurt. That's probably the way you feel that way. But Rashee Rice is a pretty big dude, and he's also been hurt.
Wasn't that a question around Xavier Worthy when he got drafted? Like, it wasn't a major concern.
He's
as
like
much
160 pounds soaking weight. Of course, it was a concern.
As much as Devontae Smith seemed to be, like, the conversation wasn't as strong, feels like it was still mentioned when the Chiefs picked him.
I know why people bring it up. I'm not saying it's, like, crazy to bring it up. I still view what just happened as a pretty fluky thing.
Yeah, it was a freak accident.
I view it as a pretty fluky thing. Your veteran tied in. You know, he claims, you know, made a mistake, Worthy's going full steam ahead, and just, you know, truly a fluke injury. If DK Metcalf collided with Travis Kelce, you were correct. DK Metcalf probably doesn't dislocate his shoulder. I agree
with
that.
Travis Kelce might dislocate, it might be the other way around.
I do agree with that, but in general, I still view this as a fluky injury for Xavier Worthy.
I do too, mostly because it wasn't happening during, like, normal football activity, and he stayed healthy all of last year, being tackled and being part of just got, he got... hit by his own guy. Mm. That's what's so crazy. They've lost two wide receivers 2 years in a row because of their own friendly fire.
Both against the Chargers, too.
Patrick Mahomes is wiping out, you know, Rashee Rice's knee, and then Travis Kelce's taking out the shoulder of Xavier Worthy. Like, you guys ought to stay out of each other's way. Like, I don't know how to say it, but
both,
like,
involve mistakes.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Now, in fairness, I would say
One was an interception mistake.
Yeah,
and
that
one was
mistake
a,
more
one
than
was
him trying to attack.
One was
guy.
A wrong, you know, wrong route or too close to the moving the defender the wrong way or whatever when they were trying to, I think, rub the corner or whatever towards one side or the other.
It also feels like one of those things that happens early in a season when you all haven't been together. This goes back to, like, we all haven't been together on the field together enough with the regular offense.
The text line, we started in fair. The text line is full of, whether it's athletic trainers, former college athlete, it is full of medical experts right now. Based
off
people
suggesting
someone did say they should. They are an athletic trainer. They did say as long as he has normal range of motion and relative strength of shoulder, they don't think he's putting himself in any more danger than if he waited 3 or 4 weeks.
Brace, right?
Harness, yeah, like a harness.
Because I think it was.
I imagine it like an exoskeleton kind of thing, but yeah, I actually don't know.
Somebody, sure. I don't know who it was, but they said it's a fully torn labrum in his shoulder. Like, it's a.
So it probably hurts like hell.
He needs surgery, but he can play. Basically, they're going to see, can he play through it? He needs surgery. Like, if it was Cody, he'd be scheduled for surgery.
Yeah, I'd already be. I'd already be at the hospital.
You know,
I wouldn't be. I guess the one thing, if I were, you know, the Chiefs, that I would be worried about is, like what you guys mentioned earlier, is that teams know it. They know what shoulder it is. They're going to be, even if anything to make him uncomfortable.
No question.
Like, and it's if he's running a route and it's a little dig at the shoulder and it throws him off a little bit where he can't quite reach his arm up or whatever it is, anything to gain that advantage, then it's going to be something that he has to get through, which, you know, Steve Sarkisian, I think, said he played through cracked ribs, I think is what it was at Texas, something like that. He played through something, you know, he's a tough dude.
People who played through torn labrums for an entire season and stayed on a football field. But it goes back to the same thing. How effective are you as well?
Random question.
Random question today brought to you by Kansas City Urology Care at KCUC. Remember, you see the best in KC. Visit kcurology.com today. For you, Gold. For you, Drew, over on the text line, 913-586-7965. Of course, YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Facebook, love interacting with you over there. You can see Nate Taylor on video. Coming up in 15 minutes from now is he'll join us to discuss the Chiefs. This is once again, a sports one, kind of.
Okay.
Sports adjacent, let's say, for that. As you guys know, J.J. McCarthy has been injured now. We'll miss a little bit of time for the Minnesota Vikings. But before that, one of the Minnesota Vikings fan subreddits, one of the more popular subreddits, was theorizing.
You're a Reddit guy?
Yeah, sometimes. It depends. If I'm looking for stuff like this, depending, they were discussing what they believe happened to J.J. McCarthy and theorizing why he did not play well. So the question I have for you today is, do you believe this fan theory for why J.J. McCarthy struggled in Game 2 versus the way he played in Game 1?
This will be good.
J.J. had a baby 3 days ago before this game. And when your wife gives birth, it results in the man's testosterone dropping 20 to 30% for the next couple of days as a part of caregiver mentality that happens and then slowly returns to normal. Do you think this impacted his play yesterday? I do. You don't need to play more than a fraction of a second off to look like another player.
No.
So you don't think J.J. McCarthy having a baby had anything to do with the way he played on?
No, I think his O-line stunk and I think he made some bad decisions.
I think the theory is fun, and it actually, you could talk yourself into it, I guess, but no.
This is always an interesting thing with athletes when they have kids, and like they have to be up in the middle of the night like anybody else has to be up in the middle of the night. Does it affect their play in a football field? You know, that's what this guy's wondering. He's just saying your testosterone drops, and I got to be honest, I doubt there's any medical science to support that gentleman's fact. Seems very unlikely that for some reason testosterone drops 20 to 30%. Who was a part of this study? Somebody said, no, McCarthy played really bad in the first three quarters of week one as well. maybe his body was preparing for the eventual birth of his child.
It's a fun theory, but there's no way.
Someone says multiplier if it's his first time as a dad for him as well. You know, you're not as used to it. Your body's not accustomed. I thought, like, you know, we used to joke like dad strength. I thought that the general non-science-based theory is that you're more powerful now that you're a parent. And I don't remember Patrick Mahomes having any bad games post. Now, his kids were born, two of his kids were born in the offseason, right? And one was born in the bye week of the playoffs last year?
Maybe. I don't remember the exact time either. I'm not buying this at all.
Jacob on Twitch said, Cody, did your job on air suffer after your kids' births? I don't know. I took 2 weeks off, so it's hard to say. I'd have taken more, honestly. Well, the company I worked for at the time offered more paternity leave.
McCarthy's now taken 2 to 4 weeks off himself. So.
Yeah.
It's a good question. Yeah, that's true. Maybe his body was also weaker, you know, weakened him physically and mentally.
So says they know their work performance was not top notch after they had a kid. That's all they're saying.
It's also just, it's an insane theory. You took this to the public.
I do think it is.
You took this. This was your theory?
To reach. Like I'm not saying it's impossible. Like, I think you could be talked into actually believing that. Like, if that actually was a thing, I'm sure it could be a thing, but it's a bit of a reach.
I don't think it has anything to do with his testosterone levels. Could you say that his performance is worse because he had a kid? That's not crazy from the 913. No, my work performance was not top-notch after I had a kid. When they're young, it's hard to, like, do the job the normal way.
What was the outing after Michael Wacha was on paternity leave? What was his outing? How did he pitch? He pitches tonight, by the way. But him and his wife recently had the birth of another child, I believe.
We'll be able to know because he went on the short-term paternity list, right?
When did that happen? What did he pitch like? Can you look at the day that he went on the paternity list? I got the game log.
I like that this guy was just straight up saying, this is known. This is science. Science fact. He went on paternity leave in between the 23rd and 31st start. So it would have been a start on the 31st. How'd he do?
I think this...
4 2/3, 4 run given up.
Oh, rough. Oh, rough man. Outing for Walker.
I don't know if this...
Oh, no.
I don't know. Somebody from the 816 says if that were true, Tyreek Hill would be terrible. I don't...
And honestly, Tyreek Hill's awful last year.
I was going to say, hang on
like
a second.
15 kids. Also, was he... Based on the fact that this person probably also wasn't like...
Yeah, was he actually there for the birth?
Yeah, I gotta say, Tyreek might have. I'm like,
I'll be honest.
What? Dang. That's not like, that's an honest comment. I'm not trying to take a shot. Was he around after the fact?
Listen,
he had 11 kids in a year.
Whether it's right or wrong, it's a shot.
Fine, but it's reality. I mean, what did you call the syndrome that the person said? Caring and caregiver doesn't seem like it fits very well there, so I'm good. I don't think so.
I don't think he just said,
dang.
No, come on, it's reality.
He didn't label it. He just said that this is, it's commonly known. That
no, you said there's something
testosterone's
syndrome.
Dropping 20.
You said
to 30
there's pounds. Like some, there's an actual term for what you were discussing.
I don't know. It's not in this thing anymore. So I don't. I felt like, I don't think I was describing it as an actual syndrome. He was predicting that maybe it was. There's not like a, there's no medical science.
People are suggesting that, people are suggesting to get J.J. McCarthy a blue chew and he'll be back to peak performance.
Caregiver's theory. That's what you said.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what Drew said. Drew said that. Caregiver's theory. Maybe I did.
You said it. That's what I brought it up.
That was not me.
You definitely said it at one point.
Maybe I just said it out loud, but I wasn't talking about it.
Someone says, no wonder Philip Rivers couldn't win the big game either.
That man has.
Antonio Cromartie as well.
How many kids does he have now? Philip Rivers.
Philip?
Tom Brady's got some kids, man. He doesn't
have Philip Rivers level. Philip Rivers can almost field a whole football team, a whole side of a field.
No, that's Cromartie.
Rivers had like 6 or 7. Oh,
Rivers has 10.
I was gonna say, he has a whole side of the football field. It's the Rivers versus the Cromarties. That's how it could go.
Cromartie 14.
Oh my gosh.
For Cromartie.
Wow.
How many is Tyreek up to? He's gonna be up to 10 or 11.
I don't know.
Cromartie's got a starting 11 and then a punter and a kicker and a long snapper.
Reportedly at least 10, but I don't know.
Mm. It's a lot of kids, man.
Can you imagine having 5?
No.
Kids?
No. Honestly, I think it's...
Let alone 10?
You better be rich, for starters. But also, it's insane. Like, I think there's a huge difference.
There's no way you know... When there's 10, there's no way you don't get their names wrong. There's no way when you have 10. There's no way.
Again, I'm one. I'd like to point out, I am one of 9, including my 2 stepbrothers. One of 7 who lived together for, like, the first, like, 11, 13, 14 years of my life or whatever, right? So I grew up in a large family. The massive difference now between why you could, I think, like, it's insane to have 5 children. And I'm sorry if you have 5 children. Insane. Now, is before, I genuinely think it was easier when my parents had it because you just didn't have to watch me. I just, in the summers, you didn't, like, have to put us all in adventure club. I just ran the neighborhood, right? I just got on my bike, and you never heard from me. I wouldn't let my kids just run around the neighborhood.
Yeah.
My son today said, can I be a walker home from school? I was like, are you nuts? Absolutely not. You have to cross a major road to get home from your school. No chance. Absolutely no chance. Five kids now. First, I think you might be bankrupt. So you better be rich. Just for starters, you better have some real cash. I also just think you just don't put kids in charge of other kids the way you used to. You're one of three. Mm-hmm. Drew, you're one of three.
Yeah.
Three seems like so many kids. Five? Seven? No.
Two or three seems kind of perfect.
What are the age range of your kids is 2 years?
Two and a half years apart. Yeah.
That's the same for my brother and I, and then my brother and my sister. It's two in between. I feel like that's not standard, but traditionally it's every other year.
Somebody said Cody ran his neighborhood destroying mailboxes. Exactly. That's they weren't watching me.
That is true.
And you said that you ran the neighborhood like you were king of the hill or something like that.
Run around the neighborhood, I guess, is probably how
I
should have.
I ran these parts. Nobody messed with Cody Tapp.
That's right.
I mean, I was in trouble, I guess, in the ways people are pointing out. My dad regularly listens to this show. He would have to admit, you did not watch us. There was no supervision. Come on. He'd have to admit it. It's like, you know, like normal, like I'd walk home in elementary school, starting in first grade when we started at Gracemore Elementary.
Yeah.
It was 0.9 miles to our house because we didn't get the bus. If you were a mile away, you got the bus for free. We didn't get the bus for free, so we walked. We went 0.9 miles, and I walk all the way home by myself. Maybe I went with my brother the first day, but you just walk by yourself all the way home. And when I got home at 3 o'clock or whenever you got home in elementary school at that age, 3:30, my dad wasn't home yet. There were some older kids there. Do you think that they were, like, following me the entire time? No, obviously not. It was just like freelance.
Yeah.
We were latchkey kids. I don't think people let people be latchkey kids as much anymore. I'm not saying zero, but I just feel like it's way less
common. I agree.
Up next, a man that now has two children, and since then, his performance, I think, has increased, including a gig over at ESPN. Nate Taylor joins us next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.